Hey guys, this is Kenan Thompson. I have a problem with you. Yes, you. None of y'all told me that Auto Trader has millions of new and used cars that I can shop from home. I thought we were friends. I put smiles on your face, but I'm not smiling. No one told me that with Auto Trader, a dealer can deliver cars to my home or that I could shop by price on Auto Trader. No one. Consider this friendship that you just learned we had officially over. Finally, it's easy. Auto Trader.
Live from the Palatial Yet Not Overly Ostentatious Studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a very sweet edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Coming up 20 minutes from now, did play at Penn State and UCLA. John Crispin will be stopping by. He was on the call at Madison Square Garden last night, as you did see Michigan State go down to Kansas State, as Kansas State is advancing to the Elite Eight tomorrow. Well, they will have a date up against Florida Atlantic, the Owls, as they did take down Tennessee by a final score of 62-55. And then coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by the men's head basketball coach at FAU, Dusty May, who will join us. So his team is now 40 minutes away from punching their ticket to Houston as a 9 seed and going to the Final Four. So a whole lot to do today, but first up, producing the extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
I don't know about that Hot Take Hickey.
So last night was one of the great nights of the NCAA tournament. Sure, you had UConn blowing out Arkansas. That's not really going to move the needle. It was a very impressive performance by Danny Hurley's squad, just taking it right out of the gate to Arkansas and crushing Eric Musselman's team 88-65. And Florida Atlantic Tennessee, it wasn't a dud, because it looked like Tennessee was, in the first half, the better team. And then the second half, you just saw from Florida Atlantic, them just crowd the paint. Tennessee really have no room to breathe. And Florida Atlantic did an incredible job on the defensive end. And then the whole game really turned when Michael Forrest came in and they were down 4 with like 11 minutes to go in the game. And he hits 2 threes and then a 2-point shot. And you go from being down by 4 to up by 4, and they never look back from there. And Florida Atlantic just controlled the game, and they controlled the second half, where they outscored Tennessee 40-28, and they end up winning the game 62-55. And Florida Atlantic is an incredible story to be a team that's only lost 3 games this entire year, and to see this team now be 3 wins away from winning it all. And that really did resonate with me. Not that I think they're going to win a national championship, but when you have Dusty May, who's going to join us later in the locker room after the game, and he's talking to his players, holding up 3 fingers, saying, guys, 3 more games to go. That really does put it into perspective just how wild and just how bonkers this NCAA tournament is always going to be and has been. Because who was realistically picking FAU to get to the Elite Eight? Like, you look at all those teams in that region of the bracket that could have been playing in the Elite Eight at Madison Square Garden. Purdue's not here. Memphis isn't here. Duke isn't here. Oral Roberts not here. Kentucky. You look around and just go through Marquette. And this matchup is going to be Kansas State against FAU. It's just unbelievable. And let's get to what made that night so great last night. It was the 2 games, Kansas State, Michigan State, an overtime thriller, and then Gonzaga, UCLA, which for a while it was like, okay, it's going to be a blowout. Then, oh, wow, the team that was getting blown out is actually going to blow out the team that was taking it to them in the first half. And then it became just a classic in the final 90 seconds when you saw Gonzaga go from choking the game to then finding a way to pull it out and survive in advance. And that's the name of the game this time of the year. But let's start with Kansas State, Michigan State. I know we were on the air last night when it was going down, but I know John Calipari, after Marquise Noel just dominated his team, he called him a little kid. Well, Marquise Noel was just a star at Madison Square Garden last night. His home, New Yorker from Harlem, and he was front and center at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden, last night. And his performance was historical. His performance and what he's done in this NCAA tournament, like, if you want to go through, like, the last 20 years or so, and you remember some players that just break out in the tourney, they go on those legendary runs, like a Kemba Walker, Shabazz Napier. We remember how fun Jimmer Fredette and Doug McDermott were. Steph Curry as well. Brunson and R.J. Diacono at Villanova. Jalen Suggs. You even go back to the early 2000s with Steve Blake at Maryland. Like, whoever you want to talk about, and whatever names that you always remember this time of year, what Marquese Noel has done in these last few games has just been flat out ridiculous. And you look at this run, and I know it's the first game of the tournament, he has 17 and he has 14. Then up against Kentucky, just dominating Calipari with 27 and 9, talking points and assists. And last night with the historical performance of 20 and 19. And oh yeah, by the way, he has 5 steals and made the biggest play of the game where he strips the basketball, then runs out the clock and has an acrobatic layup to end the game, and they win the game by 5 points. That was awesome last night. And when the game got to overtime, and I liked Kansas State going in to the game. I had them going to the Elite Eight before the tournament did start. So I liked them to beat Michigan State. But when that game goes to overtime, I'm like, uh-oh, here comes Tom Izzo. Here comes the Spartans with a team that, I don't want to be rude here, but they probably shouldn't have been in the Sweet 16 when you looked at where they were and the way that you felt about them entering the tournament. And Hauser did a great job in this NCAA tournament. But here they are. And once you go to overtime in a game where you felt like Kansas State was the better team, and I know Michigan State, Kansas State, they both shot phenomenally in the game, but when that game gets to overtime, you kind of just give the benefit of the doubt to Tom Izzo. But this Kansas State team with Jerome Tang, who's waited all those years, was with Scott Drew his first year at Baylor and was the coach, was assistant coach there all the way up until this offseason where he takes a Kansas State job. They were picked dead last in the Big 12 before the season started. And this story of Marquese Noel is just one that is phenomenal. It really is. And Keontae Johnson as well, everything that he's overcome, collapsing during a game at Florida back in 2020 and having a great year this year for Kansas State. This team is so much fun. And you really just don't want their journey and their road to end. And to see how Marquese Noel just dominated that game last night, though, that is a performance that you're going to remember forever in the annals of NCAA tournament history. And the legend of Marquese Noel just continues to grow and grow and grow in this tourney by the more wins he puts up and the more heroic performance that he puts up like he did last night. And that was an NCAA tournament record that he broke for assist in a game with 19, and it was phenomenal. He did everything he needed to do on the offensive end, the defensive end, and then also, I don't care how they explain it, whether they intentionally drew up that play, and that's the way that I like to say that it was, but realistically, it probably wasn't. And maybe there was just a little miscommunication between him and the coach, and then he sees Keontae out of the corner of his eye, and he throws up the alley-oop. But that no-look pass that he had, Marquese Noel, and what he did in that game, tossing that ball up, when he's looking at his coach, it looks like he's arguing with his coach. That was awesome. So he is everything that is right with college basketball and everything that's right with the NCAA tournament. Because it's stories like this that we highlight this time of the year in March. And you see what Marquese Noel, who was playing at Little Rock, and then he transfers over, has been at Kansas State the last 2 years, and he's standing in at 5'8", if that. And he's been the biggest star of the NCAA tournament. Now, I know everyone knows Brandon Miller, and Brandon Miller is going to go on to have a great NBA career. Everyone obviously knows Drew Timmy. You know Jaime Jaquez at UCLA, even though they did go down last night. there has not been, from a player standpoint, a bigger star in the NCAA tournament than Marquise Noel. Doesn't mean they're going to win the whole thing. They absolutely can. Now, if you're still doubting Kansas State at this point, I don't know what you've been watching. And I understand that they weren't talked about a lot heading into this tournament. And maybe a lot of that was people being stubborn. Because before they picked last in the Big 12, they were sitting there as a 3 seed. They should be, and there's no disrespect to FAU, but Kansas State should be in the Final Four. And if we could somehow get Bama against Kansas State, that would be a tremendous matchup to decide who goes to the national championship game. And there's great players in this tournament. Marcus Sasser, Isaiah Wong. You go through and you look at Drew Timmy. But so far, Brandon Miller. But the player that has been the biggest star in this tournament, and it's not even a debate, it's been Marquise Noel. And we'll see how long his team can take it. Now, to the other game. Gonzaga-UCLA. It was so weird because we hyped this thing up so much with the history in the tournament. You all remember Adam Morrison, and he was doing the game last night. And when UCLA won that years ago, then you remember a few years ago with basically no fans in the stands, Jalen Suggs, the half-court heave to send Gonzaga to the championship, where at the time it was to continue their perfect season. And this was another chapter. And really, I saw people tweeting this last night, and I agree with it. Like, let's get UCLA-Gonzaga in the tourney every year. Because that was awesome last night with what you saw in Vegas. And early on, it looked like the game was going to be extremely disappointing. Now, you know UCLA is dealing this entire tournament without Jalen Clark, and that's an enormous loss. And then Adeem Bona, who was expected to play before the game started, then you see him in sweatpants, and you're like, oh, he's not playing. And you also have the Singleton injury as well. He was able to play in the game. But UCLA, all throughout this tournament so far, they've been able to win, and they have a team that probably, to me, would have been the favorite to win it all if they were fully healthy. Unfortunately, they were not. And they were able to fight through all that. And they're up 13 at halftime. And when they're up 13 at halftime, everyone's sitting here saying, oh, another disappointing performance by Gonzaga. And then UCLA in the second half, I know we could credit the defense of Gonzaga, but they went 11-plus minutes without a field goal in the second half. And I'm texting Hickey during this game, and we're texting back and forth, and it went from, wow, UCLA is going to blow them out, to, wow, Gonzaga is blowing out UCLA. And there's like a buck 20 left, and Gonzaga's up 9. That game's over. Like, the announcers even said it. And you know the announcers try to get you to stay, and you have coaches as well that are announcing, so they never think the game's over until it's over. But I think it was Van Gundy who, when it's a 9-point game with 120 to go, he's like, this game's not over yet. And I'm like, what the heck is he talking about? And he was right. And you almost saw a team that wasn't ready for the moment in the first half. Then they were taking over the moment, almost choked that game away. Because when UCLA hits that 3, even though the game's not over, but they go up by 1, I was in my apartment and I'm just screaming. Like, I can't believe it. Right? Everyone's channeling their inner Bill Raftery, just screaming, onions, onions, onions. Because that's what it was in that game. And UCLA goes up by 1, and I'm like, oh, I can't believe they're going to do this. And then Julian Schrother comes down the other way, and it was the same play, if you recall, Villanova, UNC, after Marcus Page hits that incredible shot. And we all remember during the timeout or the stoppage of play, Daniel Sheffu mopping up the court. And then it's Arce Diacono running down the court, flips it to Chris Jenkins, boom, for the championship. Onions, double saute, whatever Bill Raftery said. It was the same exact play, and that is a shot that, once again, just is going to be one of those highlights that you're going to see for years and years to come, especially if Gonzaga is finally going to be able to get that championship. And I think this is the first time Gonzaga isn't a number one seed since 2018. The pressure heading into this tournament was not on Gonzaga. Like, every year, it seems like we talk about Gonzaga, we're like, oh, is this going to be the year that they do it? And maybe a little bit of it is because it's fatigue of asking that same question. Maybe it's also because they were a 3 and not a 1 heading into this tournament. But up until last night, not a lot of pressure was on Gonzaga. And now, being 3 wins away from finally getting Mark Few that championship, the pressure is now on. And they've kind of not been out of sight, out of mind. I know they struggled earlier in the year. And Gonzaga's always a big draw because of what they've been with that program and what Few has done. But now you go up against UConn, and honestly, I want to say the pressure's back on, but I think a lot of people are going to be picking UConn with how dominant UConn is. But you are 3 wins away, and now Gonzaga re-enters the conversation, and we'll see how they handle that. But this Gonzaga team, Hickey, and I know you said this yesterday, and it was a great point by you, it's the first time in a while where you feel like there's not a lot of conversation and not a lot of pressure with Gonzaga. And you know, just naturally, the team's dwindling away. And by the end of this weekend, we'll only have 4 remaining. We'll see if Gonzaga's one of those teams. The longer you go in this tournament, the more pressure does occur because we only have a few teams to talk about. But Gonzaga so far has been able to kind of walk through this tournament and not have a lot of attention on them. Last night, it was either that game or Michigan State, Kansas State as the game of the tournament. They're right both up there. It's impossible to pick. It's like asking who's your favorite child. And now we will see if Gonzaga, coming off that win, where it was a resilient effort, if they could go toe-to-toe and find a way to get a victory up against UConn. And I bet you a lot of people are going to be picking UConn. Right now, I would say I like Gonzaga in that game, but it's going to be fascinating, Hickey, to see how they deal with that pressure now, because it's somewhere now coming back to the scene with a little pressure now getting back into them from where they were entering this tournament. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. We'll recap all the mayhem from yesterday and preview the 4 games tonight with John Crispin, who will join us next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
What a night it was last night of the NCAA tournament. 4 more matchups coming up tonight. San Diego State, Alabama, Miami, Houston, Princeton, Creighton, and also Xavier, Texas. Last night, John Crispin, who played at Penn State and UCLA, was on the call for 2 games at Madison Square Garden. The thriller between Kansas State and Michigan State, and then also the unbelievable story of Florida Atlantic as they are now in the Elite Eight after taking down Tennessee. And John joins us right now. John, appreciate you doing this. How you been?
Oh, I'm good. Well, I mean, what a time of year. And to be at the Garden for some of this, I mean, I felt like this was probably one of the best individual performances I've seen at the Garden, at least college basketball-wise, since Kemba Walker. So what a fun night to be a part of. I mean, really, in so many ways.
You know, it's funny you say that because we opened up the show talking about Marquise Noel, and we were talking about those great performances like from Kemba, Shabazz Napier, yep. Steph Curry, Jimmer Fredette, Gordon Hayward. Like, we could do this all day. Jalen Brunson, Ryan Arcidiakono, Jalen Suggs. You have a guy that's standing there at 5'7", 5'8", from New York, and he just took over the NCAA tournament. He's been the best player in the tourney so far.
Yeah, and it's funny because so many teams think they have an idea of how to cover him, right? The hard hedge was Michigan State, but he just picks you apart. He's such a dangerous passer because he's almost has the same green light he has to shoot. He has a green light to pass, and some of the passes he makes are not exactly ones that you'd see most coaches be okay with, to the point where the defense doesn't even know it's coming. If you think about a quarterback kind of throwing it by the ear of a linebacker who's out in coverage, doesn't even see the ball because you shouldn't be throwing that pass anyway. That's part of what made it such a fun watch. But the fans really got into it too, and the whole concept of a New York guard, you know, you get lit up in the Garden. When you say New York City guard, it sounds cliche, but you think tough in mind, tough in body, and then just absolutely oozing with swagger. He had it. It was really one of the more humbling performances, particularly considering he went out with an ankle injury that I thought he was done for the year. I honestly thought, I was like, that's it. That's the season's probably over because the way he turned his ankle, I thought that was going to be it. Couldn't put any weight on it. He comes back, continues to will his team to victory, but still give Michigan State credit too. I mean, there's a reason why it was a great game because 2 teams played really well.
I'm glad you brought up the quarterback point because the pass that he had to Keontae Johnson, when we were watching it live, I said, that's Patrick Mahomes on a basketball court.
Yeah, he had multiples. I mean, he would throw a backdoor pass that you're sitting there going, that's a turnover. Oh, layup. Oh, that's a turnover. Oh, dunk. Like, there were just so many plays like that. But then you're kind of arguing with your coach. You keep your player and then the defense up, and, you know, awareness in terms of the corner of your eye. And he throws that lob in the overtime. It was one of the more remarkable things I've ever seen. And it was almost as if he was toying with everybody. He was playing the game. Everybody was trying to compete in the game. And it was just, it was one of those things that as an analyst, you try to break certain things down. You try to say, well, maybe you want to trap, get the ball out of his hands, maybe show zone at one point, slow him down, then match up. But the reality is you just kind of sit back and enjoy it. The best player often wins in the NCAA tournament, and without a doubt, Marquise Noel has been the best player before.
And it was so fitting with how the way the game ended, with him making the play and then just putting the cherry on top of the sundae with the ridiculous layup.
Yeah, and there was Mateen Cleaves, who, you know, last time Michigan State and last time Big Ten won a national championship, it was 2000, my freshman year at Penn State. And Mateen Cleaves was sitting kind of right behind the press row along courtside. And you could see Marquise Noel jawing. He was jawing with Mateen Cleaves. And after he made that pass, he started the chant. He said, "This is my city." And he just kept rolling with it. It was one heck of a matchup. But some of the crowd interaction was a big part of that too. It really brought you into the event.
John Crispin here with us. So the crowd was obviously all in support of Marquise Noel, and then it's always cool. I've been in the building when you have these teams. Like, I know that FAU is a 9 seed, but I've heard like the Florida Gulf Coast chants when FGCU went on that great run and they beat Georgetown. When you get a sense of an underdog and you're in the tourney, everyone chanted FAU last night. It's like, what the heck are we doing? That's the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I tell you, it was interesting, too, because as FAU came back in the game, you could see even the Kansas State fans really cheering along FAU. But then it was almost got to a point where you're like, all right, they won by 7. But it got to a point where I almost felt the Kansas State fans go, wait a second, should we rather play Tennessee? I almost got that feeling because you saw the way FAU tacked. You saw how physically they were able to come back in this game. They leveled up in terms of physicality and toughness, which was a pretty remarkable thing to do given that Tennessee has just been kind of the most physically imposing team in the tournament. But this FAU team's not a Cinderella. I mean, I guess we can call them a Cinderella because they haven't really done anything in the NCAA tournament, but they're a top 25 program. And deserving of so, 34-3, you don't win 30-plus games without being a legit program. I mean, we've said that before about Gonzaga. Well, what's the competition like? No, you win 30-plus games, you're doing something right. This is a team that's won 20 in a row at one point this season. They know who they are. They know how to get the game played to their liking. I mean, they can set the terms of the game. And I think they're actually a dangerous opponent for a team like Kansas State, where – you know, FAU might be a little bit more switch-heavy, and I think that could be a challenge for Kansas State.
It was almost stunning in the final 10 minutes just how inefficient Tennessee was, but I got to give credit, like you were saying, to the FAU defense. They just gave them no space in the paint.
Well, part of the reason why they didn't have space is because they couldn't shoot, and they weren't willing to shoot. And you know, granted, you lost Zakai Ziegler earlier this year. He's like your playmaking point guard, and you have to put Vescovy on the basketball, and you do. You limit yourselves in some way. But I think the way I look at it is this. All the guys on Tennessee, they didn't even think about going to Florida Atlantic. If they got a letter from Florida Atlantic, they never even opened it. And there's not a single guy on Florida Atlantic that probably got recruited by Tennessee. So you look at that and say, guys, you were superior players, yet you don't know how to play superior basketball. You were all superstars where you came from, yet at this level you have no confidence to be able to score on the offensive end. And as we're seeing, when you look at, you know, the strengths of Alabama, you look at the strengths of Kansas State, you look at the strengths of Gonzaga and their comeback last night, and UConn, they're offensive-minded teams. And we're getting to a point now, particularly with these two-year teams, the transfer portal, NIL, and all this stuff, teams aren't as great defensively as a team. The physical teams could be good defensively, like, you know, the toughness and physicality of Tennessee on the defensive end. That makes them a good defensive team. But ultimately, offense wins. And I think so long as we continue to follow that trend of offense wins, we're going to have better basketball. It'll be more fun. It'll be more competitive games, possibly played in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and less in the 50s and 60s.
John Crispin here with us. The Gonzaga-UCLA game, John, it was so weird because early on it was like, oh, it's disappointing. It's a blowout. UCLA's up 13.5. And then Gonzaga was blowing out UCLA. And in the final 90 seconds, I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, well, you know when you have seen something like it in other Gonzaga-UCLA matchups? It was, and that's what it was. And I don't know where that comes from, because I haven't really been that big on this Gonzaga team. I don't mean to say that in like a negative way. I know they're scoring a lot of points. They're leading the country in scoring, but I just haven't seen that killer instinct from them. And they lost a lot from last year. But you can just see the kind of confidence you get from playing through Drew Timmy. He commands attention. And when he commands attention, defense gets out of position. When he's such a good passer and playmaker, they're able to space the floor and move the basketball well. And if you can move the basketball well and make shots, you can come back when you're down. And I think Gonzaga has that recipe. Now, from a consistency standpoint, I don't see it. If UCLA is at full strength, David Singleton and Jalen Clark are there, different story. But the reality is, UCLA couldn't come up with the stops to win that basketball game. And yet again, we get another thriller from UCLA and Gonzaga.
Yeah, it is unfortunate, because with the Dean Bona injury and then Clark right before the tourney, it felt like UCLA, if they are healthy, they're probably the best team in the country, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd have to say yes. The only question is, like, who are they offensively? I think that's been the challenge. It's almost like the group is missing that Johnny Juzang-level player. Like, Johnny Juzang, when they made that Final Four run, he was a lights-out jump shooter. And you probably have to play through Jaime Jaquez more, and that's going to be a challenge. But ultimately, they get stops. They're rooted in their toughness. And I think Mick Cronin is building this thing for the long haul. It's not about just getting good now with the group he's got. It's about establishing a foundation. And I think a lot of people are surprised to hear that you have to establish a foundation at UCLA. Well, the reality is that the foundation is not what it once was under John Wooden. The realities of today are different. You really need to root something good if you want to maintain it, if you want to sustain something, make it perpetual. And I really think Mick Cronin is doing a great job of focusing on playing the long game. It's not just about winning a game. It's really about building this team and building this program with a strong foundation that is sustainable.
John Crispin, when you take a glance at Gonzaga, and you talked, I heard your analysis on them, and it's fair, because heading into this tournament, it's the first time in a while that there hasn't been pressure on Gonzaga, and now they're three wins away from getting Mark Few a championship.
Yeah, and that's an interesting part, too, where the expectations are down a little bit, maybe. You know, however you view that, if you're a Gonzaga fan, you still probably expect them to win a national championship. But I think if you're being realistic, you don't see the personnel that can score the way they always have. So maybe that frees them up. Maybe that's freeing for a guy like Rozier Bolton. Maybe he can make a higher percentage of shots. And if you start making a higher percentage of shots around the perimeter, you get the space you like, you get more ISO opportunities for someone like Drew Timmy. You know, if Strother can be effective from the perimeter. I think they have the opportunity to do it, but freeing them up might be the biggest key. And I think the pressure of expectation really is brutal for college kids. I don't think they realize how difficult it is, particularly when you add NIL, particularly when you add professional opportunities beyond this. It really is challenging. So maybe this frees them up a little bit, makes them a little more dangerous.
And it kind of does feel, with how dominant UConn's been, that I bet you a lot of people are going to take UConn over Gonzaga in this game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would. I mean, I look at the national championship game and I say, God, if I got UConn and Alabama, that would be a terrific national championship game. Tough teams who can be defensive-minded with their length and physicality, but also want to score. UConn is playing as well as anybody right now. And I think there was a moment there earlier in the season where they looked as good as anybody, but then they got bored. And then they got challenged by the Big East, which snuck up on us a lot. I don't think people realize how good the Big East was and how it is. I mean, look at the teams that are left in the field from the Big East. Yeah, it's still a solid group. We talked about Creighton earlier this year coming out of Maui. They're national championship good. Well, they lose Ryan Kalkbrenner, and that falls off a little bit. So I think UConn was probably surprised by how good the Big East was, but throughout that process of playing in the Big East, you develop an anti-fragility to figure out how to win in different styles, which ultimately makes you even more dangerous in March.
John Crispin, before we let you run, the games tonight, I know Alabama, San Diego State just underway. Bama's up 3-0 right out of the gate. You got Princeton, Creighton as well. Can you make the argument for San Diego State and Princeton, or is this just going to be Alabama and Creighton advancing to the Elite Eight?
I have a tough time thinking Princeton can beat Creighton, and I have a really tough time thinking that San Diego State can stay with Alabama. I think Alabama is as good as advertised. Two of everything, great length. They look to score it. And Brandon Miller is the best pro in college basketball. There's no way around that. So I do. I think it's Alabama, and I think it's Creighton. And the real question is, what type of Creighton team would we see against Alabama? Because Creighton can be really dangerous, too. So I look forward to that regional, so long as those two advance.
And then finally, Miami-Houston, and then also Xavier-Texas. That's the field tonight of what Gonzaga-UCLA and Kansas State-Michigan State was last night. Where do you go in those two matchups?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, Houston, I love their defense, and ultimately it comes down to the real health and of Marcus Sasser. If he can be that scorer, I think they could be national championship good. Now, the challenge is for Houston, the best way to beat pressure is to attack it off the bounce. And that's what Miami has. They can attack you off the bounce with pretty much all, I'd say, four or five positions on the floor at any given time. That's what makes them so dangerous. And they don't really run a lot of offense. They don't have to. They really get into action and then get into attack mode, and that's what makes them so dangerous. So I think that's going to be a good game, but I think ultimately the offensive rebounding and the physicality of Houston kind of gives them a bit of an advantage.
And Xavier, Texas?
Oh, Xavier, Texas. I'll tell you, Texas was a really impressive team, and I thought Penn State got a tough draw having to play Texas, mainly because of the matchup. But I just really like what Sean Miller's done with this group. I think he's been freed up, too. Kind of got a second lease on life. Now he just looks like a trailblazer with what's going on in college basketball at the moment. Everything that was under the table now just moved above the table, and it's all good. I actually like Xavier in this. I think they've got the physicality and the guard play, and I think Jack Dungey is one of those kind of X-factor guys because of his ability to stretch the floor.
One more for you before we let you run. All these years later, what does that run that you went on with your brother mean to you when you look back at it?
It means more now seeing that Penn State team this year. We saw the Penn State team this year, and I thought they were terrific. I thought that was a really good Penn State team. And I'm like, man, how hard is it to get to a Sweet 16? You know, we see the St. Peter's of the world, the FAUs, and you think, well, it can't be that bad. Well, it's tough. You had to beat a two seed, and it really comes down to the right two seed. Now, I think in North Carolina, when we won, we beat North Carolina, it was a two seed. I think we got the right two seed. We were able to be physical, and I think it gave us a bit of an edge. Tough two seed for the Penn State team this year to take out Texas, which was such a brutal matchup. But I think the hope for us with Penn State, and the hope for my brother in particular, he's in coaching and obviously wants to be there someday. The hope for us is to be forgotten someday. And the problem is we still matter. And part of the reason why we still matter is because Penn State hasn't figured it out consistently enough to make us not matter anymore. So hopefully one day the Sweet 16 run in 2001 is a mere afterthought and somewhat forgotten.
And I can't fault Shrewsbury for taking the Notre Dame job.
No.
I just wonder who they're going to hire. Like, I look at Dusty May, Pat Kelsey, probably the first two names at the top of my list.
Yeah, I'd say Dusty May in particular. He's got Big Ten ties, obviously, his time at Indiana under Bob Knight. Whether it's now or someday, it'll be my brother. He wants to coach there. That's all he wants to do. He's a Division III head coach. Multiple NCAA tournaments at Division III level, multiple conference championships. So at some point, it'll be him. And I know his process right now is he wants to help the right hire. He wants to help Pat Kraft and at least clarify the vision for the program so it's more of a long-term hire and not just a stepping stone job. If we have this as a stepping stone job again, no one really gets served well. And we're going to be right back to square one, two, three, four, 5 years down the road, and the program doesn't really get any better. So I think we really need to look at this thing as a long-term hire and build this program to the point where it's relevant.
Well, my producer, Hot Take Kiki, is a big-time alum at Penn State, proud graduate. When your brother's eventually coach of the team, he wants a courtside ticket to the Bryce Jordan Center, all right?
Well, deal. Deal. let's make that future start sooner than later. Huh?
You got it. John, great job for Westwood One throughout this tournament, calling the NCAA tournament. We appreciate the time.
You got it. My pleasure.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So Alabama-San Diego State is underway, and Alabama is up by a point. Now San Diego State up by a point, 8-7 with 12:56 to go. I did a parlay this evening, and I'll show you that in just a second when we go through these games. I took San Diego State plus the 7.5 points. I don't think they're going to win, but I just get a feeling that this is going to be a sloppy game. And 5 or 6 minutes into this contest, this has been a really sloppy game. Like, I think they showed on the screen, like, San Diego State went 3 or 4 minutes without a point, and now they're still up by a bucket here. I did see that Brandon Miller said that the groin is still not 100%, and he's still dealing with that. So we'll have to monitor how it continues to go throughout this tournament, but so far, Alabama, now I know that we've seen two 16 seeds win, but they went up against 16 in the first round. Then they went up against a Maryland team who is a fine team, but the Big Ten had the most teams in this tournament, and no one else is still here from the Big Ten with Michigan State going down last night. And you look at this Bama team, Hickey, there's going to be a game in this tourney where they really get tested up against an elite opponent, and then we're going to see how great this Bama team is. Now, we all think they're a great team, but so far, with just the way that their region has played out and going in, we thought it was an easy region. Like, remember, we had Fanta on, and Fanta's like, I can't see anyone beating Alabama in this South region. And you had Arizona go down early to Princeton in that first round game. You had Virginia get an upset by Furman. So, like, you just go through this, Baylor going down in the round of 32 to Creighton. I just don't know when Bama is going to get tested. I do think this may be a little bit of a wake-up call tonight against San Diego State, but I just don't think San Diego State has the manpower to do it tonight. Honestly, Creighton, and I think Creighton will beat Princeton tonight. I just think Creighton, their starting five is too big, and I know Princeton up against Arizona, everyone said, oh, look how big Arizona is. Mitch Henderson was even on this show and said, if you have any answers how to try to defend them, you tell me. But so far, Hickey, we've not seen Alabama tested. I think this is one of those games where they do get tested tonight, but you never think that they are actually going to lose the game. But nothing against San Diego State. I just don't think they have the horses to take down Alabama.
I'm with you. I guess the only thing that's me being the optimist looking towards the upset here is Alabama's really not played good basketball so far this tournament. Yeah. Now, part of that is the Brandon Miller injury. But, you know, again, they have played lesser caliber opponents in a 16 seed in Maryland. So, again, it's not like you really need to play your best. And you look right now, if they win this game and you kind of look ahead towards the road to the Final Four, take on either FAU or Kansas State, like you are getting seeding-wise very favorable matchups kind of going your way, where, again, it's looking kind of good for them so far.
Well, it's a great point that you bring up, because I'm assuming you're taking Creighton to beat Princeton tonight, right?
Yes.
Okay. So assuming Bama wins, they'll play Creighton, and then they'll get the winner of FAU Kansas State. So it's like, if I would have told you that before the tournament started, that to get to a Final Four, you're going to have to beat San Diego State, Creighton, and then to get to the championship game, beat either FAU or Kansas State. If you're a Bama fan, you're like, sign me up for, in a second. So if they don't get to the Final Four, that's one thing. Honestly, if they don't get to the championship game, it's going to be severely disappointing.
I mean, if FAU beats Kansas State, we're looking at this San Diego State game right now where they're 5. As the biggest, right, as the best seed they've played until the tournament.
Yeah, and even
right,
though
Creighton's a 6, I believe.
From a number standpoint, you're right.
From a seeding perspective,
Creighton is a better team than San Diego State.
But it's just, again, if you're, like I said, Alabama, you are
crazy.
If you are told that path of 16, when Maryland was a 9, right? 8? I forget, either one, 8 or 9.
They were an 8.
8.
Oh, no, yes, they were an 8 because West Virginia was the 9,
so
I believe.
So 16, 8, 5, 6, and then maybe a 9 in FAU, like to the final. Like, again, you would think you're walking right there.
So between Bama, San Diego State, Creighton, Princeton, FAU, Kansas State, if you had 2 selections to get to the Final Four, or excuse me, 2 selections to get to the championship game, it's got to be Bama and Kansas State, right?
My only holdup is between Kansas State and FAU. I feel like I've been overlooking FAU a ton. They are good, but they are a good basketball program. They are a really good team.
Well, they 3 losses on the year, and their defense was sensational last night. I'm telling you.
That's going to be a great game tomorrow.
I will say this. If it is Bama-Creighton, that could be a difficult matchup for Alabama. I know Alabama, it's more than just Brandon Miller, but Creighton's getting hot at the right time. And that was a team early on. There were talks about, they were supposed to win the Big East before the year started. They were 6-0, then they lose 6 straight. You had the Kalkbrenner injury as well. And this team is starting to gel at the right time of the year. But we'll see when Bama finally gets tested. Now, Houston, Miami, and Xavier, Texas. For Houston, I know Sasser, right, fought through the injury. He was phenomenal in their last game up against Auburn. He's had some time to rest it up. You think it would be even better. Miami, though, this is going to be a phenomenal matchup. And I look at this spread. It makes no sense to me why Miami's a 7.5-point dog. I plus the number, and I think Miami is very much alive with the ACC Player of the Year and Isaiah Wong to win this game outright. I know both these teams have a lot of experience. You know what Houston's done the last few years. Miami, just last year, as a 10 seed, went to the Elite Eight. That's a phenomenal matchup with Kelvin Sampson going up against Larinaga.
I like Miami. I'm a little scared of how much I like Miami tonight.
I like Miami, too.
Houston, look, I know they played a lot better
against Auburn. It makes no sense why they're a 7.5-point dog. That's what scares me, because I think they're begging you to plus the 7.5 points.
Those injuries, I think, are still going to be a factor for Houston, which also has me concerned, and liking Miami. I'm with you. The number's way too big.
We both like it. Fade,
well,
go away.
Are you picking Houston? You like Miami. You going to pick Miami?
To win the game?
Win outright.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I took San Diego State plus 7.5, but I like Miami to win. I like Alabama to win the game. I took Miami plus 7.5, but I like Miami to upset Houston. And then I took the under of 140.5 in Princeton Creighton. $40 is the risk to win $333.98. That's my bet tonight. Now, Xavier, Texas, I don't think it's getting enough love, but I think that will be a really good game, like 67-64. I didn't even think Texas played that well up against you guys in Penn State. I'm going to lean Texas tonight, 67-64. I think they win.
I unfortunately will agree. I think Texas wins this one.
All right, Xavier, you're going to the
Elite
Eight.
Sean Miller. One win away from a Final Four, finally.
And Houston as well. You're a lock tonight. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. One of the biggest coaching stars in the NCAA tournament, Dusty May. He resides for now at FAU. He's also 40 minutes away from going to the Final Four. He'll join us next.